Welcome to the Cedar Hills Special Planning Commission meeting dated Tuesday, July 10th, 2018. Community Recreation Center. Thank you for the public for attending, we always appreciate that. So the first item on our agenda is public comment. I do have a sign-up sheet here. And if you didn't sign your name, you want to make a public comment, then feel free to come here and sign it fast, I guess. The first person on here for public comment is Sherry Condi. Before we start that though, did you want to? So we're going to have a public comment like we do at every single meeting, after which we will have a public hearing on two topics. So you're welcome to speak to public comment, and also welcome to speak during public hearing. Well, not to confuse the two. But is there anybody that'd like to speak in public comment besides, well, Sherry, do you want to speak in both public hearing and, okay. So why don't you come on up and say your name and address, please?
My name is Sherry Condi. I live at 4221 West Oak Grove, New York. Commissioners, thank you for your service to our community. I know you've been much time in the thought of your place on the planning commission. I'd like to speak about the item on your agenda today regarding the rezone of the public facility to residential. And I'm asking you not to do the rezone. The written question is on this space. The city knows is short of its established ratio of parkland to resident, and it's not getting any better. Even with the new Harvey Park in the making, even with this entire future hillside parcel, a part of which is the area being considered today, we are not living up to the goals of our city founders and vision. A half acre here, a half acre there. It's being whittled away. It's tempting to say there's an opportunity here to fix the situation that caused what some might consider long-term neglect and rendering on this property. But what is the trade-off? A piece of critical street-side open space would be lost for a deal that in the future would include the whole lot. It's in our general plan. I feel that rezoning and subdividing now will set a dangerous precedent for the other side of the hillside parcel. The term Chandler uses is unintended consequences. And if you make a deal today and the basis of your decision is too broad and generalized, I believe the owner of the eastern side and the future parkland will expect the same opportunity. Then we could lose even more open space, and so it goes. I urge patience and restraint in this matter, and I hope you'll consider my viewpoint.
Thank you. So Eric Richardson, former mayor Eric Richardson, is next.
Good evening. Eric Richardson, 4275 Samplewood. Thanks for having a special planning commission meeting, and you guys look especially nice tonight, so thank you. And especially big crowd, so this is really a special occasion, so thank you. I really hate talking in public meetings, but I'm here because it's important to me. So you know, sometimes opportunities arise out of where you're not expecting them, you know, my particular lot is at this nice spot where if I was to build a 50-foot tower, it would have access to all the Cedar Hills, and so it's a great place to put a cell phone tower, and for doing that, I could earn about another $20,000 a month of my income, which I know we're kind of diverse in this community of our income levels, but $20,000 wouldn't be bad for anyone, and so that would be really nice for me because I could earn $20,000 a month. The downside is that our city has an ordinance that restricts where we put cell phone towers, and that's because of the impact it has upon the community as a whole. So we require those typically to be on city land or school land, and there's a way that, you know, that kind of goes through, but I'm not allowed to do that. Well, there's other things also in this community that we set laws around because the negative aspects of doing something are borne by the entire community. And in this particular case tonight, there's an item on the agenda regarding a parcel that our community decided should be dedicated for park space many, many years ago, back in the 1970s. And it shook on the city back then, but we were a small city running out of the basement, and we didn't have a lot of staff support. And As often happens with developers, they don't pay their property tax, and as a developer went into bankruptcy, this parcel was then sold at a tax sale instead of being dedicated to the city. If that happened today, then our great city staff would have bought that land for the city's benefit, and it would be parkland, but that didn't happen back then. So it's in private hands, but it's still dedicated as parkland, as open space. And it's always been that way since the beginning of time, since before any of us lived here, it was park space. And so I know that this item tonight is about a rezone, it's not about the subdivision, it's not about the replat, but those are things that happen after. But the reason why I think this is important and it needs to be considered about the externalities of this situation, just like in my hypothetical cell phone tower situation, is that even though this is zoned currently as public facility zone land, on the MLS, if you look at the cell for this, it says it's residential. So that means people come in place to offer on the land, being an actual residential land. They spend money and time dreaming of what they can do with this land, and then they come here and try and get it all fixed, and they find out it doesn't work. And sometimes it might cost them a few hundred dollars to get this point. Sometimes they may actually spend thousands of dollars on engineering and design to find out that the land that they want to buy isn't a residential lot. And so if we rezone this, then it makes it more difficult for someone to do the due diligence. It also means that we get together a little more often than maybe we would like to under these circumstances. And while we all appreciate what you're doing, I think trying to keep things moving smoothly is better. And so I would ask that not be rezoned, and that we try and fix the situation, not make it worse. And in this particular case, I think that the only people who would win on an eventual replat here would be, well, the landowner who bought it for pennies and would now have a windfall, and the lawyers would be involved in any type of dispute trying to resolve through this, but our community would not win. And while we're all in favor of private rights, private property rights, just like with my cell phone tower, that's something that is mitigated throughout the city that should also happen here. And so I ask that we not make that change, and that we keep things the way it's always been since the beginning of time. Thank you.
Thank you. So that's the last name on the public comment sign-up sheet, but if for some reason you change your mind and you have a passion to come up and make a public comment, I will entertain anybody else who wants to go up and make a public comment for 3 minutes. I also advertise the fact that the Planning Commission has two alternate positions vacant. If you would love to serve on Planning Commission, you can make application to the city, and I'm not quite certain what you would say other than not wanting to be on the Planning Commission. And then City Council appoints, right?
Mayor appoints the right. Council appoints with mayor recommendation.
Gotcha. So if you have interest in that, we could use, or we always use a couple alternates on that commission. So if you want to get engaged, the Planning Commission typically meets once a month. I think it was 2 months we take off, if I remember right.
Yeah.
December and forget what. So, okay. With no more public comment, then I'll close that portion of the meeting. And I'll now open the public hearing portion of the meeting on the topic of review recommendation on the final plan approval for the Cedar Canyon subdivision located at 4600 West and Cedar Hills Drive. Just for the public's knowledge, this parcel received preliminary approval in the last planning commission meeting. Okay. So just so you're aware of that. So I have signed up for the public hearing. I have Sherry Condi again. I'm going to help and say a few more words for approximately 3 minutes. So this is the same letter you submitted. Commission is curious.
No.
Okay. I read that one, so.
I can read it.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Thank you for this opportunity to address the Cedar Canyon subdivision. I understand that you are on the deadline to get this project approved, and I can appreciate the pressure being put on the city to expedite the approval. Unfortunately, it seems to me that amenities that should be included in the subdivision are being left out. I don't think there's enough parking. I don't think the stormwater drainage design is sufficient. I don't think there's enough green softscape or landscape parkland for the residents to enjoy. Even the detention basin is still shelved with rock mulch. As I understand it, there hasn't been a transportation study done on the specific proposal. We don't know what 80 new houses will do to the level of service provided by the adjacent intersections. Because of this lack of data, I would suggest that the city prepare for traffic mitigation by requiring an escrow account funded by the developer in the event that vehicular and pedestrian congestion become unsafe. I'd like to make an observation about the current quality of growth in areas I'm familiar with in the state of Utah. It seems to me that development is currently being moved forward by threats and lawsuits rather than adherence to general and master plans. Mediation and court actions are steered by a real estate controlled legislature in which developer and their attorney has the ability to bully small communities and disrespect their planning commissions and efforts. I wish there would be a time when our city officials could direct growth by pulling out a community-approved general plan and interpret our current needs with an understanding of residential desires, local control, and political authority. It seems those times are not with us now. In the coming years, I hope that my concerns about the new Cedar Canyon neighborhood will have been unfounded, and it will be worth the litigation and settlement headache. I hope it will prove to be a livable and desirable place to attract investors.
Thank you. Thank you. You did that for you, see? You're certain where you live, so. Okay, so Sheriff is the only one to sign up for a public hearing on this topic, but again, if anybody is so compelled, well, about entertaining anybody else. And approval for the Cedar Hills Gateway Commercial Subdivision, located approximately 9826 North, 4800 West. Just for the public's knowledge, this piece of land is the parcel on the south side of the Hart's gas station between them and the home. So that's what we're talking about. And I have signed up for this public hearing. I have Sherry Conde, located at 4221 West Oak Road. You still better Oak Road action?
Yeah. I like it better. I like it here in Cedar Hills. Thank you for allowing me to address our commercial development. Even though this is a preliminary plan to improve engineering, I feel it's important to envision what the final look and feel of this subdivision would be like, especially the designs for public improvements. The end result starts here and now, and you can make decisions that will have long-term benefits to our community. One major issue I'd like you to consider is how convenient and safe parking will be in this plan. With so many proposed lots in the design, there would be a high probability for accidents. Density equals danger. If there were one less lot planned for the subdivision, improvements to vehicular and pedestrian circulation could be made. One out of every five vehicle accidents happen in a parking lot, and I've read the same ratio applies to pedestrian accidents. So it will be important to have clearly defined four-way stop signs and enough engineered clearances for line of sight at corners and intersections. Making the plan walkable would include engineering dedicated pedestrian access walkways, pedestrian aisles, they're called, through the parking lots, have raised crosswalks and speed humps. One less lot would allow for landscaping to separate sidewalks from driveways and leave some space for other greenery and aesthetic attractions. I'm concerned about circulation because of the tenants that could be located here. A gym and fast food drive-throughs create large amounts of traffic. These possibilities must be considered in this engineering level because now is when the amount of space needed for safe pedestrian and vehicular interaction should be determined. Yes, four fast food businesses would bring higher profits to the developer, but are they all necessary for what the community needs? Would one less lot be worth protecting families walking with their children through busy parking lots? Would trading away that would be a public improvement? To me, that would, should be engineered now.
Thank you. So, Sharon is the only one to sign up for the public hearing on this topic. And again, if anybody so feels compelled, I entertain you as long as they know this topic. Come on up, say your name and address, and you have 3 minutes.
My name is Andrew Reed, and I live at 9949 North, 4680 West. My house backs up to this lot. My concern, I think this has been shared before in the planning commission, not by me, but by others, is the road that they have planned going through the development that goes north-south and exits onto the street or by the motion portuary. I feel like that's going to be a concern for traffic coming in and out for the residents that live over there. Also, I agree with Sherry's comment, more green space between the buildings and around is appreciated aesthetically and makes more pleasant for all.
Thank you. Anybody else before I close the public hearing?
Hi, Bradley Hunter, 1762 North 90 East American Port, so just down the street from the development. So my wife and I have a young family. She's the one with the baby. And we have a couple of young children. So this is just down the street from us, and our biggest concern is the road that runs to the north-south. We don't want it that way, and it's possible we're not going to have it that way. So we would love to see that changed. Our other concern is that the green space has been moved where traditionally it was closer to the southeast corner, and now there's the two lots for the larger building that are right next to each other, and we would rather see that where we have more green space and less like New York and more like Cedar Hills, where there's a lot of good space between the buildings. So, and then more green space, as shared by those before, is always welcome in public places, especially when we know we're going to get a lot of traffic from the high schoolers during lunchtime. Thank you.
Thank you. Last call for the hearing. We're closing.
My name is Ken Kraft. I'm at 9925 West, so other pretty close to the Zenhurst.
Which city?
9925.
Which city?
Oh, in Cedar Hills.
Okay.
So we just work back up. Mm-hmm. And I just want to lend my support to what the three have said before. And I'm even thinking about that road and the fact that that road, if possible, could go out to that main, to the main road. Just, with an entrance coming in from that main road, which I think would help the neighborhood as far as traffic and congestion that we see there. There's a lot of families over there, a lot of little kids. And I think it would just be a smarter plan to have it go to the main road for that particular one. And I also agree with the green space and making sure that we have that. And I am definitely in agreement with spreading out the larger buildings instead of having them closer together. And so I don't know if there's a way for us to be able to see additional preliminary plans that could be drawn up that we could consider. I don't think any of us disagree with the fact that the place needs, that area needs to be developed. It's just how it's being developed and what that might impact to the residents that are there. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, last call for the public hearing.
My name is Sean Miller, 4625 West, and I'm here north in Cedar Hills. And I don't have anything new to say to you. I'm here with the same concern. Going to bring that traffic into the area, in and out of the development as it is, following that traffic into a road that the neighborhood uses as the main entrance into the neighborhood would cause burden that isn't really necessary when those same cars could be directed out onto the main road, which is in all likelihood where they're going to be needing to go anyway. So when I just echo what everyone else has said, regarding what the cars are funneled out of the development as well as the green space.
Thank you. So I'll now close the public hearing on the Cedar Hills Gateway. So the next scheduled item is approval of the minutes from the May 22nd, 2018 Planning Commission meeting. Two of the members here tonight weren't at that meeting, two were, so we do need to ascertain whether the notes are correct, because I wasn't there at that meeting.
I had no comments on them. I thought they were accurately represented.
Will you make a motion to that?
I move to accept the minutes as presented.
I'll second the motion.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any votes? Okay. The next topic is number four, review recommendation on final plan approval for the Cedar Canyon subdivision located approximately 4600 West and Cedar Hills Drive. Andrew, do you want to kick us off? If yeah. You want to present to us within the last meeting?
Yeah. It's kind of hard. It's a big post when I have to do that. I'm going to scoot that up. Just give me 1 second. So I'll just take that. Other way.
You can look backwards, or it's in the table too.
Yep. All right. So what we have on the screen in front of us is the Cedar Canyon plat. It is an 80 lot subdivision. Down, this is Cedar Hills Drive right here, and this is 4600 West right here, and this is the front piece. So right now this road that's on the west side doesn't exist. This is the piece of land that the city has been working with the developer on for, let's say, a little over 6 years. Was initially is north of 300 units for congregate care, with a small commercial element on the west side. After a number of meetings, that got parsed down to 291 units during the preliminary phase, where in November of 2015, the City Council gave their preliminary approval with a number of conditions. I believe there were 14 at the time, a number of which, a few of those got withdrawn. But the number of conditions that the developer must adhere to in order to proceed with the final phase. The developer, as is their right, went to disagree with a number of those conditions and took the case to the Utah State Property Rights Ombudsman, who issued an advisory opinion versus City of Cedar Hills. And the Property Rights Ombudsman ruled heavily in favor of the developer that a number of the conditions, if challenged in district court, would likely not hold up. But the purpose of the Ombudsman's office is to mediate these types of disputes prior to going to any potential litigation. It's a service provided by the state. And from that phase, the developer approached the city with a proposal to change the scope of the project. And that's the scope of the project got changed from being congregate care facility to being a residential development. So really the choice the city has is, do you work with the developer on the residential development? If not, we go back to the congregate care facility, not the 291 unit congregate care facility, not the 165 that was approved by the council as part of their conditions. So the council felt it prudent to work with the developer on this issue. And last month's city council meeting and the month prior to the planning commission meeting, the city adopted the plan development one zone, which is a zone that is only found on this 12-acre parcel, but it adheres to a development agreement between the city and the developer, which is approved next week as part of the city council agenda. But it stipulates the criteria for the design in the subdivision. And so that's where we are. That's how we got here to where we are tonight. Is there is still a small commercial element in the northwest corner. I believe that's about 7,000 square feet, along with, like I said, the 80 lots. These lots
according to the design elements that the city approved of the developer, would consist of three architectural elements on the front of the facade of the home and two on the others. And it would be dictated by an HOA, so all these streets would not, this street would be become a public city street. All the streets within the development itself would remain as HOA. However, the infrastructure, the water, sewer, secondary water lines would be part of the city's infrastructure system. So the city would be maintaining this like they do with anyone else in the city. So with that, there is a deadline for the city to approve this development. And it's July 31st, at this point, obviously, about a year from now. And if the city approves that development by July 31st, as part of the settlement agreement, the developer has stated that they'll put in that commercial grade fence along the western portion of the project, as well as complete the road from this intersection south. And as you'll see on the next agenda item, it's critical that this road be continued south because it needs to have continuity with the project we're going to be discussing next. So in the meantime, the engineers from Ensign here on this project and the engineers from Mark have been working together to get those to be able to seamlessly merge. So with that, that's kind of where we are in the phase.
Who finishes the road?
They do. So it's an asphalt curb gutter sidewalk, whole street profile.
How far south?
To the property line. So the utilities will be stubbed either way to the property line, but the developer will finish it from the intersection south.
So what I'd like to do is, I have one question about the thing you just said, and what I'd like to do is then, kind of based on tenure, we'll just kind of go around, Robin. Like, so John, you're going to be the first people to ask. But I have one question, and we're, City Council, when they approved this with those conditions, wasn't that for 165 meetings? They're not a 291. I'm wondering why are we going back to 291 units? You said we would have to go back to the 291.
The challenge would be for the 291, not the 165. That's not really part of this discussion. It's just that that's based on the ombudsman's opinion.
I guess what I'm asking you, does anybody in this body or can you recall City Council when they approved this with those conditions, was it for the 165
yes.
units?
That's 965 units.
Right. So I'm just trying to figure out how we don't approve this, how are we reverting back to 291? How do we get back?
If it doesn't get approved, then per the terms of the settlement agreement, correct me if I'm wrong, per the terms of the settlement agreement, this issue falls off the table and we're left with the comprehensive care facility.
Approve the 165 units.
No,
291.
So the legal challenge by the developer would be to 165 approval, saying that was unenforceable, mm-hmm. and they would press the 291.
Right.
So, okay, so it may be we're back to 291, but
you will. I honestly do not believe the DMA, I believe it will.
If they're going to litigate, they're going to go for everything, also mm-hmm. they can see.
Okay, I just want to understand how we got back to 291.
Yeah, if the Cedar Canyon development goes off the table, the settlement agreement becomes null at that point. At which point the litigation that is currently on hold comes back to the forefront.
Okay. So, John, would you like to, do you have any items you want to bring up on the topic?
Just a couple of questions from our last meeting. And forgive me, I've not read everything on these sheets that's come through. I've read quite a bit. Road. Wildflower Lane, where it stops, on the west side.
Yep, just for the audience's sake, just a point right here.
We are doing the gap in the wall there, and
enabling
the fire.
Right, and that's a good point. I spoke with Corey about it before the meeting. There will be a gap in the wall right here, and there will be a knockdown ballast bollard that a fire truck can drive over, as well as some sort of structural fill, a paver, or something that will allow for emergency response vehicles to quickly access into the property. My conversation with the developer was that that needs to be identified on our plan.
Yeah, because I didn't see that there. We were adding in additional fire hydrants.
Mm-hmm. That's on the list.
Still job.
Okay.
It's on the list or on the map we're looking at. Is it on a list or it's on the documents we're reviewing?
It's on the list that's being discussed with the engineers.
Okay.
Those two were primary concerns to me. I know that the fire marshal is looking at this very well. Remaining thing, are we metering the PI?
Yes.
In each residence or just into the subdivision?
Right now, the development agreement, I believe, calls for specific. You just opened the can of worms. Okay, let me back up. Anybody that follows the state legislature every year will notice that there's a push every year harder and harder to mandate the cities at some point be able to report how much secondary water is being used throughout the city. Right now, we can report how much we're pumping into our system, but where it goes, we don't know. I'm getting off topic, and I apologize, but we anticipate that at some point the state legislature is going to require mandate that cities need to come up with a plan that requires them to install secondary water meters on all residential lots. This last year, the legislative bill file stated that it was giving cities 10 years. So we felt like since this is coming, we should get the developer open in under the city.
All right.
So that was a yes for household?
For household, yes. It's a long-winded answer. I apologize if that's the rationale for it. They wouldn't be charged. They wouldn't be charged per usage. They would just be there active meters. And it would also provide the city with a good estimate for what residential water used to be like this. So I can see.
Okay. Final question. Has the traffic study been done?
Not in this portion. The reason we didn't require a traffic study is because they did a traffic study for a property character and then some found that there were no level of service changes on the intersection.
Jeff?
I don't know a lot. The planning director is the one I've got on my screen. Are we just looking right now at grading and drainage for the roads themselves? Because the lots look, I mean, some of the lots look like they're down 4 or 5 feet.
Right. You have PI. So if you look at these, and you're not going to be able to see from this number, but the lots are sloping down, so it's almost like the dry miles are on an elevated surface.
Right.
That was another item I brought up with Corey prior to this meeting, was that this is a concern for the city. We don't want to see that. Usually we do it the other way so that the right drainage goes away from them. So he's getting more information from the engineers on that.
But we're being asked to approve.
Right.
So that will have to be a condition.
Yeah, it can be a condition, I guess. But I think the other thing to consider is that before the city had, in the past, I was told that the city had ordinances that required that the foundation be 6 inches above the crown of the road. That's not the case anymore. So, in theory, they could build these lots like this. I wouldn't recommend it, but they could.
Corey,
do you want me to address it now?
Do you have anything to say or not?
Yeah, I'd like to understand it. Because let me explain what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
Elevated roads, sunken lots. I'm seeing water would essentially drain to the south, potentially onto other property owners, which obviously we don't want and can't have. I'm also seeing we're building a retention pond.
They're building.
So you're building a pond. Are we maintaining it?
As of yeah, to be honest.
So it'll be city property. We'll maintain it. You're going to actually build a retention pond, which means it retains water, not letting it go in 24 hours. So what the fence, is there a safety issue? Are we worrying about what kind of depth of water we're going to be retaining?
So on that, we don't fence our retention basis, but say, I can think of the number of them that are now throughout the city that go down to Walmart, one right behind Walmart.
Or not next to a school or something.
No.
Or a few blocks from the school.
That one is from a few blocks from the school. It's probably walked by every other man's school. It's about a quarter, probably a third of an acre.
The holding water, has it been an issue at all?
Never been an issue. It's the only issue we've ever come up is people are using it as a sled wheel and get a running start from the neighbor's backyard.
So you have another one of those too.
There's that one, and then there's the one up by the fire station that is actually a lot deeper. I would say that one's probably top to bottom, north of 17 feet.
Yeah, it's a almost 20.
People use that one for water slides.
That one has been filled and kayaked in before.
Okay.
But it has.
We don't get...
Well, it's not been an issue. It's never, I wanted to just bring it up.
No, it's never been an issue. Excuse me. Back... part of the development agreement, we're talking about a retention basin that's down here on this corner. You can only kind of see half of it from this map, but initially we talked about it being on a quarter acre piece of land, and at that size, I don't feel like it lent itself very well to being a commercial area at all. It would be very deep. It would be probably a lot like it'd be probably 18 feet deep, I believe. Just in order to get that capacity that's needed to contain everything on the streets.
So you widen it out, shallow it out.
Right.
There we go. And I'm not saying it has to be fenced. I wanted to see what was normally done in those situations around schools, which I work on. They're always a major issue. And frankly, districts go one way or the other. So there's not a hard and fast rule around the retention problem.
No, and we've never had an issue referred to this kind of plan.
Okay. So then back to my drainage issue.
State your name and who you work for in this case.
My name is Corey Schupp. I'm with Blue Line Designs, and I represent Cedar Hills Farm. We are landscape architects and planners, and we'd just like to say great question. Chandler did bring this up before. I did make a phone call. There were a couple of very important elements that dictated the elevation of that road, and it's two-part. The existing utilities that the city wanted us to tie into requires that road be up at that elevation, and then the neighbors to the south, that was also a request for those neighbors so that earth wasn't pushed to that and then elevated up 4 feet, and then a fence put on top of that. And so that goes back quite a ways in many different discussions. But your point, I think the most important point is driveways going down into those lots. That will not happen. Those basements are elevated, so they're not full-on walkout basements, but the windows will be literally up out of the ground. And so what you're seeing is part of the basement floor of that. Sorry, Chandler, I thought I was doing something when I did that.
No, you're
not playing. It's magic.
My computer's over here.
So those driveways actually do elevate up into the garage slightly so they can get positive drainage out of there, and the basements are just not full on walkout. That would require nearly 8 feet, I think we're talking.
Yeah, I did.
No. Yeah, I'm saying 8 feet for a full walkout. You'd have to excavate down, and that would really exacerbate the problem. So.
So are we avoiding? Essentially, are we avoiding a sanitary lift station? Is that why the road is up where it is?
Yeah, that's a good engineering question. I just contacted the engineers when Chandler asked that question, and they said no. That specifically was located for the utilities to tie into.
The sewer would still be ground fed.
Correct.
Right.
So if the house sits at that level, then it's and they're tying into the existing utilities, that it will be gravity fed. However, in the off chance that there needs to be a lift station, we do allow them board basements.
I guess what I'm saying is we always run into this problem. We either elevate the building, elevate the roadways so that we can avoid the cost of a lift station. And what I'm looking at in the plan just looks off. It looks on with all the roads. 4 or 5 feet out of the ground as we get to the south. I'm not joking with you. And often we have to take our building and our roadways down to match the topography. It looks better and we have to pay for a lift station because the main utilities out in the streets are just not low enough. We're dealing with that in a few other cities right now. And, you know, I understand that it's a cost issue, but at the same time, I'm wondering if we're paying a price aesthetically
correct.
To save money for a developer who would,
That wasn't the issue. The issue became now when you, if you were to pull those down, you're now sinking the houses towards Cedar Hills Drive. It's a push and a pull issue, and then connecting those utilities to the new 4700 West. So it was ultra complex, even though it looks pretty simple and flat. With the location of the existing utilities and to make it function correctly, that was the recommendation. So.
Excellent. Chandler, architecturally, what review do we have, if any, of the homes that are going to go into this area? Our guidelines before have been pretty loose, so I'll let you know.
Sorry, state your question
again. So, we're on 40-foot wide lots
right.
here to get up to 80 homes, which means essentially, and versus what Daybreak and other places where they will put the garage on one side and put the main entry to the house on the other side, or an alley in the back, or make that the main entry. We're going to have both the garage and the main entry to each home
on
facing
on
the street. We got about 30 feet of width to develop that.
It's tight. Each garage is still a two-car garage. But to your point, and this may be something that the engineers can consider, because right now they're showing a 5-foot drop-off from the road to the home. And there may be a way to drag that out and soften it a little bit, so it's not just an abrupt termination, but it's more gradual throughout the property. That might be a way to solve that.
Yeah, means fill. It can be done. A 30-foot wide home with, it doesn't have to look like Welcome to Our Drive. That's my concern in this neighborhood with 40-foot lots. I see 50-foot lots in other parts of our community, 40 foot's narrow. And then the drop-off, like you're talking about, because the topography I'm seeing on this plan starts to chew up the usable lot area for the actual house. Now we've got those setbacks of like 5 feet or something on all four sides versus the zero lot line development. And we're pushing dirt into that area.
All of these issues will be addressed depending upon each of those homes that are selected to go on there. And it wouldn't surprise me at all, Jeff, to see that the grade actually is taken up on the side of the home and at the rear of the home, and that front will be filled just like you're saying. Let's imagine worst case scenario is that you still come in flat on a driveway.
Yeah,
and then if someone wanted that home to have more light in the basement, they would leave it to where the front yard would actually go down a little bit as well and stop the walking home, et cetera. But having done enough of these, 99% of the time you're going to get exactly what you're saying, which is they'll build that apart.
So back to my original question then, as we consider approval tonight, is just drainage, how we're handling storm drainage on site without impacting the homes
right.
to the south.
Let's take that in two ways. The site drainage and the drainage calcs are part of the packet, but their drainage calcs will be for this road, the hard surface throughout. For all the roads here, and then there currently is existing a retention basin right here. It's being removed. So the capacity that this retention basin down here on the southwest corner needs to have is enough capacity for all of these hard surfaces throughout the project, as well as adding the capacity of that storm drain system as well. And that's where engineers have gone over, and they're verifying that. They verified that, and it's supposed to be measured against the 100-year storm, 100-year event.
So then I'm piping the houses, where's all the stormwater from?
Then
all
the, yeah, that's the second issue. Is the second issue is according to Cedar Hills code, each lot is required to maintain their own drainage. They're supposed to come up with a plan for drainage on their own property. Now driveways typically go into the streets, and we capture that. But roof drainage with downspouts, that's got to be contained on site. So it's tight, but it can be done.
Do we do that anywhere else?
Everywhere else. Every lot is required to maintain drainage on their own property.
So French drainage,
exactly. Subsecated. It's not very common for people. It's not typically an issue. Typically, the only time we have water spilling from one lot to another is when it's like sprinklers left on. We don't get issues where stormwater floods in a neighboring house. I don't know that actually.
But that is common here in our jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. On-site retention?
Yeah.
Yes, it's required. Anything else for now?
I think, just architectural review, you were starting to get into that. What if anything, will this commission have in terms of reviewing the home design?
No, it'd be done through the building design process. So, similar to the Cedars, Wagon Well and Cedars East, when we get a building plan in those neighborhoods, we're not required to, but every time we do, we go through and we look at the CCNRs and how it meets the CCNRs. So there will be an architectural review committee that's established as part of this, I believe.
As far as I know, I'm not there, actually.
There, in these types of instances, it's very, very common for an ARC committee to
Established by
the HOA. Right. It's run by the HOA. The developer establishes the HOA. And at that point, they're the ones that stamp plans to become the city. So we don't approve them typically until we get a stamp and set the plans for the HOA.
And that's developer control until they sell 75%.
True. But if we see that he's not adhering to his own architectural standards, we don't approve it either.
No? So what? Gary? Anything?
The row of houses to the south, large plant, you said. What is the rear setback?
So I think it's 20, but it's been too long.
I think the whole set is large.
Sure. And there's flexible design subdivision, so it's going to be on the plat. It's not on this plat map yet.
Lot by lot.
It looks like 10 feet.
I want to say it's 10 feet. It's pretty exact. That's what it looks like down here. But that's the public utility easement. We show those around every lot.
So those aren't the.
That's not the building.
Okay.
So
I think
they,
I don't know. I can't remember.
I don't know what it is.
What city? What's code? Was that
let me look it up fast.
Please. Sorry, let me search.
Why do you have anything else, Jeremy?
Yeah, let's move on to life.
And Chandler, are you kind of keeping a tally of the potential conditions we might be making when we make a motion? So we don't have to repeat every single thing. I love watching it. Thank you for doing that. We're good to start it, Chandler.
Thanks.
Get that one in.
Yeah, I got that.
You have anything else, Jerry, can say that? I didn't want to. Okay.
And I'm downloading the file, so if you have any questions.
You should, as part of the motion, you can state that the setback needs to be city code.
It would meet city code because it's part of the PD1 zone, so the PD1 zone is established to meet the setbacks that are already agreed upon between the city and the settlement.
Yeah, I'm not so much concerned about it for footage calculation as I am just the impacts to
the residents.
So is there a landscape buffer or anything that is going to be required anyway. Is that an agreement?
We can talk about that.
It's up to you to come up with some financial requirements too, by the way.
I just can't remember if we talked about that last time.
I think we did tonight. I don't think we did. Which I'll make some of those
things too. So it's 10 feet. It's tall. I think that begs the question. We went through a lot of different things last month. Has staff had a chance to review whether all those were appropriate?
I believe most, yeah. Ones I remember were, yeah. Like, for example, the big ones were the utilities, and some of the basic engineering for the meeting city standards. You find that when we're redlining plants, you just small and mishiding to our size, things like that. It's happened. So the setbacks are the landscaping buffer is an interesting concept. That could be something that they're required for the city as part of the development. They want to see them plant a number of certain types of trees in the backyard in order to create some sort of landscape buffer. That's something we can talk about.
I'll pass on to you. Anything else?
All right, I do want to read the record. So, Orianne Spear, who serves on the commission, couldn't be here tonight, but she did send a comment about this. I read her last paragraphs. She understands it needs to be a green area set at Cedar Canyon Development, but does not agree that the retention pond should be put in the Cedar Hills Gateway land and then counted as part of the required brick or sand green space. So one development solves the strange problem on the back of green space requirements of the other development. Using precious green space percentage that could be spread throughout the commercial development. If it can only be situated in that area, then it's been lying paved, you know, in Shaw, or that new land, the retention area that the land needs. So if they go up and shop in more than 30% green space spread around the development, since they may even cause the whole land. So those are our comments on this topic. For the record.
We'll still talk more about some of the green space and open space on the next agenda.
So bear with me, I have a few items to go through.
Okay.
First of all, the documents in front of us, are they the same documents we had in the preliminary meeting, or are they different?
They're different.
Okay. So I believe in the last meeting, there was a recommendation made to change the name of Wildflower Lane to something else, because there's another street in the city with Wildflower.
We were going to change that to Lily Lane.
That's Wildflower Lane on this map, so.
Rename that one.
So what's it going to be?
Lily Lane is going to be on the bottom.
Lily Lane.
Which is right now.
Right, and we're going to rename that Easter Access.
I don't like Easter Access.
You like Easter Access? We can name it that, but you don't.
So anyway, that's an observation I just had. The west side of that wildflower that we talked about earlier, where it comes to the drop in, is there a radius there for a car to turn around by using people's driveways? I mean, it's not cool as that. It seems to me that, especially if you're along a trailer.
Between the driveways and the lane, it would serve, if the driveways and the road itself would serve like a right turn. So they'd be. Pulling into their lot and pulling out.
So you would have to use someone's driveway or something.
Your own.
Well, assuming you live there, right? But if I happen to drive down there and have to turn around, I would have to use someone's driveway, I presume, right?
Probably.
Okay.
Or just drive around.
A 30-point turn?
I think it'd be a little less than 30. Because the road is.
It meets all your current standards.
It's still 30 feet. It's almost like three lanes of traffic.
Okay. So three is good.
It's the width of three parking stalls.
The road is.
Yes, and you could drive three cars on our parallel at the same time.
Okay. And that's it. Those dimensions are the same dimensions throughout all those roads, right?
No.
So some are narrow.
No, that's the most narrow. The other one, Marigold Lane, right here is 35. This is 35. I believe this is 35 as well.
That's including the walkway.
Yeah, but there's a walkway on one side. So they're all fairly narrow streets, probably similar to the Cedars subdivision as well.
All right. So parcel C and D is designated as open space. Is the intention to develop those into parks initially, or when? I guess, do we need to make a motion that it's not just purely open space, but it should be built into the park space? You said we're going about that process.
Yeah.
We've approved the open space, it's really a requirement that you build a park.
We can rename them as park spaces, future parks, yeah, rather than open space.
That's what I prefer.
Well, they're shown that way on your landscape plan, L100.
They're going to be landscape.
There's one L, there's one drawing that does show playground equipment is C100.
Parcel D has shows
that one
playground.
Right there.
Well,
is that
that's playground equipment?
I guess I'm at, are we including some playground equipment, or is that just a depiction of what life might look like should they decide to put it there? I guess.
Yeah, you're not approving playground equipment, but that's just kind of
that's not
designers and stuff.
We don't generally bother planning commission with playground equipment, but
so
there are walkways and benches through there and playground.
So I would suggest on this channel that we rename that to park space instead of open space. And what's the intention around the build out of this in phases, or the main, you know, I guess are you doing phase one, we're gonna go to the south side, and we're gonna do the north side? What's kind of the intent around the build out of this project?
As demand dictates. What they're talking about is they want to get construction on the public improvements going right now. They're working right now on the change application for the water rights, so the city has those water rights, and they want to be able to pull building permits very soon. So, and build a show home. But as with any subdivision, it's really in terms of the owners and the property developers demand.
Is the
all of the property pays at a certain number.
So I guess again, are all these streets depicted here going to be built at the same time? You have a bunch of empty lots. So you see what I'm saying?
But that's how every subdivision goes in.
Right. So they have to build all the streets,
mm-hmm,
and all the infrastructure, street lights, fire hydrants,
yeah,
all that, whether they ever sell the house or not.
And what they'll do is they will post some sort of bond or cash escrow or surety bond to the city for those improvements, and they won't be released until those improvements are done. So they do get that.
Okay. Well, sorry, my comments are kind of over the map. It just, I guess it's all over the map. So, so in the last meeting, there was some discussion around requiring two design elements of the homes that face that on the north side and the east side of the project have at least two design elements, one of them being above fence line grade. I don't know if that was ever part of the actual motion that was made. This was kind of a comment made. Where I'm going, now it's actually a comment that I gave the channel brought up. Where I'm going with is that with the fence that surrounds this property, without any design elements above fence grade, all rear of the houses are just going to be stucco-looking houses all in a row. It'd be nice if we could spruce them up a little bit for the public's pleasure, viewing pleasure, so that they don't see, you know, I guess, part of the house that is either stucco after stucco after stucco. And the design element is, I believe there's one design element already required at the rear of those homes, according to the settlement agreement, I believe, is it already two? So I would just require that one of the two or both be above, you know, viewable above fence line. Now, the architect can figure that out. I don't know how to do it, but I just.
They're currently. They're on the south side, I think.
You were talking on the south side, you were talking on the east side.
North and east.
North and east. As people ride into Cedar Hills down that road. So that would be part of what I would suggest as part of the motion, would be requiring one or both of those islands to be above this line. You mentioned in your opening comments, Chandler, that there would be commercial grade fencing on the west side of the project. I assume that's the in the settlement agreement, there's a depiction of a kind of slow looking fence.
Concrete
stamp, probably.
It can be anything. We would allow the concrete with the foam inside, that a little bit easier to maneuver versus, or the bowl on the concrete with the crane to maneuver.
Right. This would be like one of those concrete pen stone stamp type fence, probably stemming to look like it's a stone type fence, right? My thought process is that you may want to, going back to the comments about the buffer on the south side, is to require that same type of fencing be on the south end of the subdivision between those homes and the other homes. I'm just open up a discussion with my fellow commissioners and do that. Is that Commissioner Briggs going too far again, or?
I don't think that does much for the residents to the south because they already have their fences up.
Not all of them. There's a lot that don't.
But on the plan now is a fence vinyl, right?
Yeah.
Six foot?
Yeah, so the point from that stone. So I'm just upgrading the plan from 6 foot vinyl to this commercial grade on the south side. I mean, previous meetings, typically the public's always shown up and talked about their concern about this whole subdivision and project and its impact on them, et cetera. So I'm just going out there.
We can broach that subject with Matthew to do that. Happy to have that conversation with him.
I don't see making it a requirement.
It may not pass final muster in the council because the settlement agreement currently stipulates the fence that gets down on that level. I don't know if you've had a chance to go through that. It does stipulate that there will be the commercial grade fencing on the very west side, and then the rest would be vinyl surrounding the entire project. And Doug, in the last meeting, did talk about making it a nicer vinyl fence with the columns, kind of breaking it up, giving it an architectural element rather than just seeing a sea of tan vinyl that you go
through. There is at least one resident. Appreciate.
So full disclosure,
full disclosure, that's right south of the lot number.
Are you this one?
No. Lot 61, south of there.
Okay. I didn't know you had this.
That's how I did.
Okay. Just as a body real, I listened to the audio from the last preliminary meeting. My sense was that nothing is going to be added to this project and thus it's legally required by state code, was the impression I got from comments last meeting. And last the body, and so if we were just to talk to them or suggest these other elements that we require it here as part of our motion, then there's a bigger likelihood that it could happen. I misinterpreted that comment from last meeting, but that was the sense
I would say it's yes and no on that. Really, it's kind of a weird answer. Is that some of these things are dictated by the settlement agreement. It's very clear. And other items, I think, are more open to discussion. In any regard, I still make notes of what everything you said.
So the fencing on the north and the east, there was a comment, like you said last month, that they could break that up. I forget, it was maybe 12 feet or whatever it was with a type of stone column. And that they would probably not use a white colored vinyl fence, that some other color.
Yeah.
So I would suggest make that part of the motion. I didn't see that as any part of the changes here in the documents. I want to talk about the commercial building for just a moment. So I would like to include in our motion that the commercial building be completed and built and available for use prior to any occupancy permits being issued for any of the residential homes. This is a commercial zone after all, and
It's well, one is that was a specific condition that was part of the original council's memo in 2015, and the state quickly pointed out that the city cannot require what phases happen when we don't get a dictated economy. And second is that it's not in a commercial zone anymore, it's in the PD1 zone. So this is, while the commercial lot is still subject to the terms of 10.6a in the city code, it is in PD1 zone. Kind of a mixed bag here. But the short answer is we can't require them to.
So let me ask that, Corey, what's the current intent around building that commercial building? What's your current plan of intent around that?
I think the intent would be to find a tenant, fill a building, and build a building to match that tenant's needs. Rather than build a building, let it sit vacant and be an eyesore, and hope that whoever we could convince to come in there and then rebuild a building to meet their needs.
We're seeing that same thing on the Amsos property. They've got a building there, and two of the slots are still vacant. And that's actually the reason we changed the methodology or the approach for the commercial areas. We're not going to design buildings and go find tenants for the building. We're going to find tenants and then build the buildings to their needs. Is kind of the proposal on the next agenda item. So in order to not have that building sit vacant for a long time, I believe it's probably wise to find a tenant, then build a building according to what they need.
All right, I'm going to belabor that point longer. However, I do feel that if they build the building, they're probably more compelled to see the tenant versus if they, there's no requirement that they ever find a tenant. We may never even have a commercial building there, ever, conceivably. Right? So, I'll pull that over for a minute. Lots 1 through 4 that abut that commercial building, there's a fence there already, right? That vinyl fence?
That's part of the commercial grade concrete fence.
Okay.
It's going to jog up and surround this.
And the homes in the very middle, the two circles, lots 21 through 28 and 36 through 44, the rear of those homes, is there a fence behind those homes, or do they all stare at each other's rear kitchen windows?
There's no fence requirement.
Is that?
There's no fence requirement in the HOA right now. So they very well can stare at each other if they like.
Yeah. All right. I would suggest this body consider requiring vinyl fence of some sort or fencing of some sort on the rear of those homes so they have a traditional backyard, not sharing backyards with their neighbors.
Have you ever been up to the Cedars?
I was going to say, our lot.
We're not allowed to have any privacy fences in the Cedars because all you would see would be vinyl fencing and no green space.
You're going into an area where you're requiring things that are going to go right back to how we got here, which is.
In this case, I would probably suggest that a fencing standard be established as part of the CC&Rs and then let the individual homeowners,
generally speaking,
determine what the fencing type is.
So, up in the Cedars, you do have fences or you don't have fences?
We don't, but if they do...
We have fences, but they can only be open black wrought iron. No privacy vinyl fencing.
Okay.
And those are by resident selection. They're not a requirement. Mm-hmm. And our lots are 10. We have 45-foot frontages in many instances.
Yeah.
The rationale is so that you see open space and not vinyl.
Okay. Is there any designated crosswalks in any of this subdivision?
I just couldn't
location on the map.
There is. If you look at site plan C100, if you can turn it real fast. There's a crosswalk. Kind of thing, hard to see. There's a crosswalk right there, crosswalk right there, crosswalk right there, and system crosswalks right there.
Alright, and on the bottom?
And on the bottom, yeah, there's too many crosses.
Okay, thanks. So as far as the commercial building requirements, if and when they ever build a commercial building there, that's when we would talk about hours of operation for garbage and lighting and all that, right? So I'm not going to get into that tonight.
Yeah.
So the settlement agreement talks about the architectural elements, and I presume that when we pass final approval this night, the homes contained herein are subject to the CC&R document, the settlement?
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
So what we see in there is what we get?
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
Which I would rephrase that.
Yeah?
What you read in there is what you get.
So what I see, I don't get?
Well, the pictures are taken from certain home builders.
Yeah.
And so depending on who the home builder is, they'll still be held to that standard, but all the standards established, but it's not like they're choosing from one of these cookie cutter pictures. All of the homes look really nice on these in those documents. They're really, when we're going through the approvals, if they're we're looking at what's being said, not what's being shown. So to speak.
Okay. So on the landscape document where the trees are all depicted and such, is that truly the number of trees we're talking about?
I think so.
Where I'm going with that point my thought process is, so the CC&R document, the settlement agreement, also has a depiction of landscaping in it. And the landscaping document depiction in the settlement agreement, the CC&Rs, has a whole lot more trees than this document before us tonight. So I actually counted them. There's like 178 trees. And there's not 178 trees in what's being proposed here. So, and I also noticed that in the settlement document, there were trees in the rear of those homes on the south. There's like two, three trees in every backyard. This has no trees in any backyard. So I'm just wondering, what the premise was around the reduction of trees, or just...
I think you're looking at two types of trees, a developer-installed tree and then a privately-installed tree. So one of the things we already talked about was along the southern border. Let me just pull up the landscape plan. Give me just one second.
So the L100 is more like streetscape.
Yes.
It's not meant to be the landscape plan for an entire...
Right, so the developer would be required to put in these trees, right? And then the homeowner, as they see fit, would put in the vegetation on their property because it's not common space.
The number of trees being shown there reflect exactly what the city required. We actually had to add two more trees after review.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had to scoot those trees because they ended up in the view triangle. And so even though it was a bit of a puzzle piece, we met your actual requirement there. And we actually got them unscooted out of the triangles and everything's in there, but it is the requirement of trees.
But one of the items we've talked about, I made note of, is changing the development agreement to require the homes, especially along the south, possibly on these other homes back up to streets, to plant two trees in the backyard or one tree in the backyard.
Well, so we seem to defer the settlement agreement left and right. I would defer to it again here, and it's depicted in the settlement agreement, so I would require that there be trees in the rear of the homes in the south.
Well, we will. That's what I'm saying is that maybe in the development agreement, like, because these trees are specific trees in specific locations, whereas in the development agreement and CC&Rs, you establish that the homeowner shall plant one tree in the front and one tree in the back. in order to meet that, but you're not telling them what type of tree, because you really can't, because it's a private property.
Yeah, I'm like that.
So then we approach it a little differently, that they're adhering to the current landscaping proposal, but they're also requiring homeowners to plant trees along the way. Just done.
All right, does anybody else have anything to come up from the moment since I went to this?
It's not aspen trees.
Yeah. I have a bias. Okay. And then anybody else have anything else? Anyone else?
Do you want me to read my list of what we have?
Yeah, please do.
On the southwest access, show structural elements. That's this access right here. It's not really an access. Slopes on the south lots, exploring the possibility with the engineers of softening those grades. Landscape buffers on homes to the south, which is the trees. Renaming Wildflower and Lily Lane, that's this road and this road. Renaming open space to park space. Architectural element above fence grade, I put 6 feet. This fence grade can be 3 feet. Concrete fencing extending along the southern border, that's along here. And specify the color of fencing, which you guys want a really bright white, right? Ten?
Red, white, red.
Ten. I veto this.
You red, white, blue, or blue, ten.
And then the last one I had was establish a fencing standard in the CC. Which I think will address most of those concerns.
And my concerns about drainage basically are already addressed.
I think they're already addressed. I believe they're already addressed.
On lot by lot basis.
Yeah.
And does it require a fencing?
What?
Does it require a fencing?
Establishing the fencing, you talked about the last one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Establishing the fencing standard in the CCRs. Rather than dictating to them what type of fences we're going to go where and move over and install them, establishing a fencing standard and let the private property owners put them in at this
committee. What about the fence, the so pillar fence on their surrounding you talked about?
That's one thing. This is a mandatory fence.
I'm talking about the east and north sides of the project. Right now it's a white vinyl fence.
No.
It's just vinyl.
It's okay.
But we
the last meeting there was some expression of willingness to put in some stone, break that up and put in some stone pillars, and change the color from white to something else. It wasn't a requirement in the preliminary, but I would like to put on the list that the vinyl fence that's on the north end of the project and the east end of the project be not white. I don't think colors, so I don't want to know what color, but and then would be broken up with some type of architectural rock or stone columns.
Stick with architectural colors. Right.
So I'd like to have the part of the list, in my opinion, maybe the commission will vote that down, but versus just a vague, you know, fencing.
Yeah.
I just have these up to not this body, right? So, anything else on the list that you might have that shouldn't be on the list?
But I miss.
So, there is a motion example here in the document which can be potentially used by somebody here at the table. If they had a desire to do that.
If you're going to make a motion, rather than listing all the changes, just refer to the list that I said. I get it into the minutes.
I have a concern about one of those motions. I'm compelled to speak even though I don't like it. I'm not sure we can require stone fence on the south border to recommend or encourage.
Everything we're doing is recommending.
They're all recommending.
Well, everything's recommending. So So what we'll do is I'll work with the developer on these issues, and I will make sure that the council knows what the planning commission made as a recommendation.
Okay.
And then it's the council that really can say, no, we're going to require this.
I think that's in the agreement. So you can throw the kitchen sink at it all you want, but city council will ultimately decide who should.
They're the land use authority, so.
Yeah.
I'll make a motion. I recommend, I move that we recommend the city council plan for action to have a staff located on approximately 12 acres, 4600 West Sears Drive, as part of the settlement agreement between Sears Hills Farming LLC and the city, subject to the list kept by Chairman.
Yeah. Is there anything on that list that you want to add to the
I would suggest to say the list that's in place on July 10th, 2018. I trust China.
Yeah,
that's my motion. Do I have a second?
No second.
And before we vote, and I think we'll do a roll call vote. I just want to explain why I'll be voting no. Basically, several reasons. One is just as a little history. I was trying to give a little bit of history on this topic, and this has been front of this group for a number of years. I'm the only one in my commission or city council that's given a no vote on any proposals, and I'll give the reasons in the past why that is. Today, my primary concern is that I know that there was some discussions conducted between the developer and council, and then essentially were given to the planning commission. We were then given a really short window, right? Kind of like take it or leave it. You have 60 days to essentially approve this, or we're going to do the 291 units. So I feel like there's a little bit of duress, but that's not the primary reason. Why? My grand reason why is that I feel like the drainage for this development should have been advised on the property versus the city essentially putting it on the other parcel that we'll talk about here in a minute, the other part of the commercial zone. And I thought the consequences, there was a pocket park initially in the preliminary conceptual plan in which those two major buildings, it's now gone. And there's public comment earlier about how we make them open space. So part of the reason why there's less open space in my pocket park is because we're putting the detention basin and the drainage pond for this development on another parcel altogether. So I would have preferred that the developer build three or four fewer houses and would have kept the drainage on their own development. So that's why I'll be voting no. So let's take a vote. Let's start with Jared.
Yes. Affirmative.
Okay. And you, John.
On what
I vote no. Okay. So the ayes have it, 3-1, the motion carries. Okay, the next topic on the agenda. Is item number 5, review recommendation on preliminary plan approval for the Cedar Hills Gateway commercial subdivision located at 5798-26 North, 4800 West. Apologies to open shop for Rusty, he's all going to get here. That's the next topic on the agenda.
Sure.
All
right. So when this came before the Planning Commission, as part of the conceptual plan, what we saw at that time was something similar, but it had a level of detail that's not being shown here. And I alluded to it earlier in tonight's meeting, in that in order for the property owner, who is now Mr. Okeshaw, in order for him to better be able to seek out tenants and
possible future landowners. We felt that it would be better to not design the building and then go chase the tenants, but to chase the tenants and find out what their needs are and then build the building itself. So, as with the commercial element that was on the northwest corner of Casino Canyon development, we're not approving any buildings, we're not approving any projects, we're not approving any, really even any open space tonight. Or lack thereof. What we're approving tonight is really almost like a subdivision. But what it is each of these lots are then able, the landowner is now able to go out and seek tenants. So if they want to put in, on lot two, they want to put in a building that houses two tenants, they can do that. But they need to contain their parking, they possibly need to contain their parking on this piece, or develop a way to share the program or share the parking between the lots. So we're not approving parking. There's no traffic studies done here because the traffic is largely determined by the use, which, you know, in the case of one of the items we talked about in the past was indoor storage units, and that would be lot 8. The traffic for a use like that is very different than, you know, a use that has, I don't know, a drive-through. It's very different. So it's hard to know that the traffic impact immediately, but what we're proving tonight, what we're looking at proving tonight, what's being presented to you tonight, is basically the public improvements. So the last development is this one up. It comes up in this corner up in the northeast. And this road ties in to that other road, which is why it's essential for that road be completed to the property line. They're stubbing all the utilities into up to the property line, at which point Mr. Openshaw, his group, will pull those utilities throughout the project and finish that. So the question then is, they've met with their engineers and they've said this is the way we want to see it parcel off. Now, as each parcel comes in, by the time that this is fully developed, they do need to meet that open space requirement, which we've, as a city, discussed allowing them to use this portion of that land as part of the open space. And currently the plan shows rock, I believe, but what we're working with them and the developer on is upgrading that to grass, so it's like our other retention basins, and then leaving us the possibility of doing some future improvements on that.
I believe on the latest they're showing it as, no, rock mulch, not the grass.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So my conversation with the developer was that he would get with us a price differential and we would work between the city and Charlie on how to upgrade that.
What kind of, you said it's grass, what kind of upgrading can you do to a open space like that? Is it retention basin? Really can't. You want to talk about what
sure, yeah, can you do? Enough money and engineering can do almost everything. at a future date, the city could look at developing underground storage for the containment of the stormwater, similar to what they're doing on site here. They've got underground storage at this location right here on the south end. And then building park on top of that. And that wouldn't even be called an engineering department the whole time.
So who would, I mean, that'd be the city funding something.
But as a grass park, when it's grass, it's more easily accessible for families. If there's a number of restaurants in the area, they can go sit down there and eat if they want, versus if it's rock mulch.
I had a small concern about something you said. The percentages of open space, you mentioned that the conclusion of the full build-out would be the correct proportion. That could potentially lead to the last person buying the lot and to have 90% green space, 10% building.
True.
Is there a way we can require
including this, to have each other lot maintain a certain percentage so that at the end
of the total... Well, it's something that will be presented to the Planning Commission. It wouldn't take you by surprise, if that's what you're considering. As we take the project and bring each individual project to the Planning Commission for the building process, we'll be telling you what the open space is. And if we're too low or too high, we can make those adjustments. I'm less concerned about it going back to the last one has to do 90% open spaces. I guess it's a possibility, but I think it's really not.
But to your point, if an expectation is established up front, then the developer who's trying to attract people into these sort of lots will understand how much of the lot they have really truly available for use, right? Versus a let's apply for a building and then discover how much open space requirements he wants. So maybe you want to include whatever the required percentage is, right?
Well, and there's the ability for a developer in our code to bring that open space requirement down to 25% should they do certain types of open space, which we've been working with Charlie and his group on, and they've been great to work with. The open space, really, if you think about it, if you go walk through Walmart, how much usable open space is in there?
So where's the Walmart open space though?
That is the open space, but that's similar to what we're proposing here. I guess the open space in a commercial zone isn't really supposed to be a park. That was a nice gesture initially, but I don't know if that's not really a requirement.
So what is the requirement for the entire? So the entirety of all these acres.
Was the entirety requirement? The entirety of the project needs to be 30%.
And how much? And this detention base is
half acre.
It's half acre.
Would you go along how much of that 30%?
1/16 is 1/16. Oh, sorry, 1/8.
It's not very much.
It's not.
All right.
So you're saying it's still, be 27, 28%.
Yes. So, if you think that this parcel that the city owned it's just shy of 9 acres, but let's call it 9 acres. This is half an acre, so it's 1/18 of the project. And you take out that open space, you take out these streets, it's net the streets, so you take those out, and then there still needs to be more open space there. So it's not like it's all contained in that one retention space.
I guess what I'm saying is, if there's 30% required at the roads, how much of that is already taken up by the retention site? Is the entire 30% requirement gone?
No.
Is there only a small percentage left?
No. I don't have a full number yet. I need to get with the engineers on the actual square footage of the roads, but because the roads aren't just, look at this stripe going through the project here, that's not just solid asphalt, that's curb gutter, park strip, so there's some open space in that too, so there would need to be a final calculation. But to your point, all of the open space is not contained in the retention basin. This is Charlie, come on up, I didn't introduce you, come on up.
Take your name and
Julie Olson Shaw. What else do you want to know?
What do we want to know?
Just to give you an idea, to answer your concern there on the landscape, that's certainly not our intent, not our intent to go, let's cram all the landscape. But if we did that, it would be another park, basically. We need about, if you look at that, the landscape requirement is 30%. We need basically 3 acres of landscape. And the park that we're, or not the park, but the retention basin that we're counting there is a half acre. And so we've got it, so there's another 2.5 acres, if that helps you understand a little better, of basically landscape green space area that we've got to, install within the rest of those lots.
Where, so conceptually, what type of make this attractive to, you know, to this project and to attract tenants, et cetera, et cetera. What would your preference be for this commission to require the open space? Would you prefer it to be dispersed throughout? Would you prefer to be an open space perimeter or source around that? Just give me a sense of what makes it marketable and viable from a
retail standpoint, you know, to attract. You know, they, you know, retailers, they expect, and they know that they need to have a landscape, and they want you know, landscaping. They want it to be beautiful. So there's they're you know, in the what I envision, you know, in the back, you've got basically a 30-foot easement from that back wall, from the back of the property.
This east side.
Right. Here. So on the east side, you've got a 30-foot easement. So that will most likely all be landscaped. At minimum, 15 feet of it will be landscaped because that's what's required. There'll be, you know, with one particular retailer we're looking at, a lot more than that would be landscaped. On the front side as well, off of 4800 West, you know, we anticipate a, you know, at least a 15-foot landscaped grass strip, trees, so forth. Typical of what you would see in other, you know, little shopping areas that you would see. So, you know, obviously those are going to be further defined specifically in a site plan for each individual lot that you'll be able to say, no, we hate this, you know, you need more landscape. But I totally understand your concern about there needs to be some level of landscape. You know, it can't just be zero on one lot, you know. So anyway, I hope that helps you understand what I'm saying.
Thanks. So last time, except when it was kind of a conceptual plan, there was talk about certain levels of interest by certain parties and things of that nature, you know, along indoor storage, indoor training facility, and things like that. What's the latest on that front, and are there tenants already lined up for any one of these lots?
A few of them.
And the in the indoor storage, I remember, sir, we never approved that as a permissible.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. I don't remember what we did.
What we did was we created an overlay zone.
Right.
Created an overlay zone on this back portion that would allow for a limited amount of storage.
Okay.
Indoor
quantity. So
it's not the kind that you see with the cinder block and the barbed wire on the top, and then you drive in through these alleys and then the bay doors. It's not that.
But it took the density down as you went towards the home. So.
Yeah, it was a nice, it's a pretty soft use to have between a residential area and a commercial area.
So we don't know as of this moment, I presume, what across the street, how that's not been master planned, whatever we know, but what streets are coming out of that plan development across the street.
There actually is on Harvey. So this is 99 right here.
And Harvey connects up.
Harvey's going to connect. They did a master plan 3 or 4 years ago. They had a master plan. You can Google it. It's terrible. and we've met with Utah State Developmental Center and expressed a lot of concerns because of the way that they flow the traffic through that plan. It creates a bottleneck at the juncture of North County Boulevard and Cedar Hills Drive, actually. And we felt like every day during the school year at 7:45, that intersection was just going to be a complete nightmare. So they're actually going back to the drawing board on some of those.
And I think the only thing that's definite right now is that east-west connector road. Yeah. Everything else is up in the air. I believe that they're seeking RFPs right now, and it's in the process of selecting a developer.
So I had a couple of thoughts. On Road County Boulevard, I'm sure some of this experience is where you're on Road County Boulevard and you're trying to turn into Harts or Walmart or those developments, and there's so much traffic now, so much speed, that you almost get rear ended sometimes as you try to slow down. There's really no turn lane, right? There's really no turn off, or there's really no, just...
Talking about North County Boulevard?
Yeah. And so I'm just thinking about these two cutouts here by Lot 1 and Lot, between Lot 2 and 3, that the road there have...
This one and this one.
Yeah, have some, I don't know, expansion of
it. On North County Boulevard?
Yeah, a small turn lane of sort, or wide, or something that needs a little bit of a room to...
I think your idea is prudent, but it's not even in our city.
What's not in our city?
North County Boulevard.
Right, but lots 1, 2, and 3 aren't.
Right. But we can't expand their road profile.
No?
Point. No.
Why?
Because it's their road.
Whose road?
The county's.
Okay, but we only...
Sorry, it's the state's road.
Okay, but we could expand the road.
No.
The Cedar Hills Road that we own.
This road?
Yeah.
So in order to do what?
Just make it easier to get off of the front kind of Boulevard.
Well, right now they're showing this is 36 feet, this one is 29 feet, and I've already spoken to them about this one. But the roads, each one of these roads, these access points, well, let me focus on these two, not this one. These two access points both need to have full-out access points where as you're driving out, there's a turn lane to go left and there's a turn lane to go right. Because I don't know what's going on across the street. And then there needs to be a turn lane holding it, so it should be enough space there for three vehicle movements.
My other comment is, in public, they commented earlier about the road that comes out on...
The 9900?
Yeah. 1800 North American Fork, or 9900 Fork. In previous meetings, we talked about... one idea was to push that down above lots 3 and 4. I think the body didn't favor that, but there was some discussion around that. But the other was requiring, as you're exiting the development, the right turn.
Right.
So you cannot turn left.
I'm going to be the least popular guy here, but I think that this, I honestly believe that this access point needs to be there. The reason I believe that the access point needs to be there is that as you drive to the commercial area right now, if you were to drive to this commercial area, there's no way to access the commercial area from Cedar Hills. We'd have to technically leave Cedar Hills and come back into it. So what we would propose, because right now this is showing pull in, pull out, right in, left, right, in and out. What we proposed was the possibility of adding in a barrier right here that allowed for pull in so that cars from Cedar Hills could pull in, and cars from 9900 North can pull in. But if you're choosing this access to leave, you're rerouted out to North County Boulevard. So if you might leave to go to Cedar Hills, you come back out through
the... That's, we're saying the same thing. Yeah,
we're saying the same thing. I'm explaining it to the public.
You're explaining better than I did.
Yes. So, no. But I do feel like this access is a must-have. Okay. From a traffic flow standpoint, I really feel like that's something that
needs. I mean, I concur that getting access into the commercial is all we do want people to shop and spend money, and you get sales tax revenue, and we want to encourage that activity. But we also can mitigate the effects of that by requiring them not to turn left there into the residential community.
I think.
Yeah, that's what you just said.
I think the primary, I'm not saying there aren't other issues, but I think the primary concern is people leaving there, turning left to filter through the very residential neighborhoods there in order to get.
So if you're having somebody that needs to get from this point back into Cedar Hills,
they're not using this smaller residential neighborhood. No, they're going through this 66-foot right-of-way and then on the Cedar Hills Drive, which I think alleviates a lot of those concerns. One of the ideas I had was, someone had was a right-in, right-out here, so you could only access it from Cedar Hills, and then you had to leave out like that.
I think it
doubles your traffic because people pull in here expecting to pull in, and then they do a U-turn. I'd rather one trip go two.
Have you seen how well our write-in, write-out works by Marco's Pizza? It's a joke. People drive the wrong direction, so they don't have to.
But also, I believe it's probably not reasonable to require that.
It's absolutely
ridiculous.
Just
given the location of these other crossroads, one's about right here, and the other one's up here. So if you were to look at this, you're swinging this road so far to the west that you're kind of creating a garbage lot here. Or you're swinging so far to the east, you're creating a garbage lot on the east side.
I wasn't thinking to require. I was going the other way.
Yeah. Yes, it does not line up. It's kind of dead center right to it.
Which I think is actually possible.
Mrs. Gandhi brought up a number of, I think I've given a lot of thought to this, but a number of things that I think the Planning Commission can consider. One of the issues is parking. We don't know what the uses are, so we're not approving any parking, but that is something that will be approved on a case-by-case basis based on the use. The city has established parking standards if it's an office complex versus a grocery store. And so we don't want to park it right now out of fear that we may underpark it or overpark it based on the needs. The line of sight, that is established in the city, in the city code and city standards, so that let's say on this lot six right here, if they're building their building, they're not shoving their building clear out here to the corner so that people driving in and out of the project can't see around these corners. These buildings are set back far enough so that as you approach intersections, you have a clear line of sight in both directions. And then walkability. This is something I've made a few notes that I'm going to go through with the developer on where I'd like to see some sidewalks and maybe some modifications to those sidewalks in order to enhance the walkability of the project. I don't believe that there needs to be a sidewalk on both sides of every street. If you look at the McDonald's access there, there's only a sidewalk on one side. But you just need to be able to walk through the project. We want to preserve as much of the land as we can for commercial development. So we want to be able to choose where we put those sidewalks so that it maintains the goal of the code to be walkable, to have that walkable element, but also to leave the developers some room to maneuver. And then the raised crosswalks. I've brought this up with the developer in the past that where there are crosswalks throughout the development, to have those be raised in order to bring the traffic, the speed of the traffic down. And also, if you pay close enough attention here, this road throttles from point A right here to point B right here. It's going to go from a fairly wide road, a 66-foot right-of-way, and it's going to it's going to narrow. So it's going to look like a bottleneck, but it's not going to create a bottleneck effect of traffic. But what that will do naturally, by narrowing the road, it will slow down speed. So you narrow that road, and you put in those raised crosswalks, and all of a sudden your speeds drop precipitously.
Assuming one of those is a stop sign or something.
Yeah. Where you bring those. There will be traffic signals throughout.
What's going on south end of Lot 5?
South end of Lot 5, this box?
Yeah.
That's a good question. Let me scroll down. So all of the stormwater drainage system is collected at that point in an underground system there. So that box is simply showing the stormwater is in it.
That become part of Lot 5, and they can park over it?
Yeah, so then you can pave over it. You don't put a building over it, you can put landscaping over it. You typically put a parking lot over it.
So one question I had for you, and probably for the developer, flexibility in terms of lot sizes. Are we approving tonight specific lot sizes? The reason I ask is you may get somebody who wants a larger corner lot. After our vote tonight, is there flexibility still to make those kind of changes to make sure we're attracting? But you don't have to necessarily combine lots. I'm looking at 3 and 4 and wondering if, you know, I might flip those, but I'm not a developer. I won't pretend to know. There's a science to that, I know. But I wondered about a larger lot on a corner. A larger lot allows a building to be farther back from the corner, maybe more landscaping around it. Maybe it's a restaurant or something like that on that corner. Are we locking in?
No, it's the city faces this issue a number of times even in residential property line disputes. In that, this is actually very simple because currently all the lots are owned by the same individual. So if they come in and they say, like, let's take your example, they say, I like lot 3, but I like it better on the corner.
Right.
It's easy for them to do a boundary line adjustment for the city and report that down to the county. So nothing's locked in.
Would that come back before us?
No. I don't know they would have to. I would imagine then when the building is established.
When the building's established, they'll show the correct plat. So you wouldn't be given, you wouldn't have to go back to this meeting in a year from now and say, okay, would that lot look right?
But we'll review the building against our own design standards, all that kind of stuff. Landscaping.
So does anyone make a motion on this topic? Or you got the points and feelings? So I think the only preliminary requirement we have thus far is that did not fire the right out that topic.
I'm just going to show right out on South End.
Yeah, is that the one thing we have on this whole so far discussion?
One thing I would ask is the Planning Commission, and this maybe goes to what you're saying earlier, Jaron, is that this access specifically needs to be widened in order to be traffic needs. Right now it's showing, I think, 29 feet, I think 28 feet, I think that needs to be with the sidewalk. We need to be able to get 3 cars right in, right out, and full access in.
I would really appreciate that, John.
Left and right, out, and full access in.
And is that right? Why do you mean the entire road, or is that
clear? No, I think what they can do is just flare out the access at this, at the very east, where western end.
Again, why preserve much leasable area?
Right.
So they're going to flare out on both those streets?
I think the one to the north is okay.
The one to the north is okay because they're showing the sidewalk here, but this one I just think needs to be just kind of flare may present the wrong idea, but just that it at some point near the end it just kind of opens up and allows for turning lane.
Essentially two changes to this.
Yes. And like I said, you're not approving buildings right now. So as those come, they're still gonna go through the approval process. So in the concept plan, I feel like we got hung up a little bit on where's the location of the dumpster, you know, showing the architectural renderings. And it was so many buildings to look at that it was a little bit scattershot. So rather than do that all at once, it's best to just approve the lots and then bring those buildings as there's tenants to fill
them. Would you enjoy talking about dumpsters, Chandler?
I do. Mm-hmm. No, I really do.
Yes. So is there a motion that'd like to be made by anybody?
I move that we recommend the City Council the preliminary plan for the City Hills Gateway as presented by staff to be located on approximately 12 acres. 9826 North, 48 West, subject to revising the public access easement for the center road connecting to North County Boulevard to widen it for 3 lanes, right and left out and left in, and modifying the public access easement on the south side of the property to enable right in.
Full access in, right out.
Full access in, right out.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion before we vote? All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any nay? No one says nay. Okay.
One item of note is it says that there are public access easements. From the time we've received this to today, we're actually calling those roads. So, okay. I don't know that.
Are we going to give them numbers in the future? Road numbers? Or will they?
What do you mean?
A road name?
A road name or a.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be all the time.
All right, the next discussion. Can I make a suggestion that we make a motion to move item number 7 to the next topic? Some of the public here is interested in that topic. And you know, I want to talk about cargo shipping containers first. You know, if you make a motion to change the agenda, moving item number 7 to become item number 6.
I move that we swap items 6 and 7 on the agenda.
Correct. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So the next item on the agenda is review recommendation on amendments to City Code Title 10, Chapter 3 regarding zoning of certain portions of area currently in the public and the PF public facility zone to the R1 11,000 residential zone and to make official zone map to reflect these zone changes.
So the Elk Grove piece is actually the pieces in question are two pieces up in the Elk Grove neighborhood. There's on the very eastern side, there's a piece of open space that is not on the agenda tonight. It's the piece on the west. Just want to make that clear.
Who owns that land? To the
a gentleman named
Parsons. Is that Hanson?
Mm-hmm. This piece was just giving a 3-minute history of this subdivision, how we got to this process was this subdivision was approved by the Utah County Commission back in 1976. The county commission were the ones that signed off on the plat. Typically when a subdivision is approved, we have these open space requirements as part of any subdivision process, residential subdivision process, especially in the hillside zone. Where you have these types of slopes that are not really buildable, they don't lend themselves to development. However, in 1976, Cedar Hills did not exist, and there was no municipal body to turn over open space to. So it was held privately by the developer, who was required to pay property taxes on that over the years. And as was mentioned in the public hearing, at some point in the 80s or early 90s, I forget which one, changed hands a few times, but they did not pay their property taxes on it, which was tax sale, at which point someone picked it up for a really great rate. But they've sat on it. Mr. Parsons has owned this property for 25 years now, and he's sat on it for a while. I don't know if he was one to purchase it from another individual or he purchased it with tax, tax auction. I don't know. And that's, quite frankly, it's not very relevant. But we've gone through a number of proposals on this piece where individuals have come. The property owners tried to sell it a number of times as land that if you can get it rezoned and the open space vacated, then you can put subdivision in. And I think that's the issue that gets the surrounding neighborhood here at these meetings, because they do want to see this land preserved as open space, as does the city. The city wants to see this be what it is. It's always been in our plans for some sort of park development, not a traditional park like the soccer field, but more like a trail walking through the connecting cities of the trail systems. On this other piece, there's actually a flatter area down below the road quite a ways that would lend itself to a nice little area for development, for a park development. That's not the piece in question.
And who owns that other piece?
Mr. Hanson, a gentleman named Hanson, I forget his first name.
So different owner.
Different owner.
The Tulsa Public Facilities and open space.
Correct. Correct, yes.
Has there been any applications on that piece?
I've spoken with a number of people that were inquiring about the parcel, even one for a hospital, believe it or not.
It's an interesting conversation.
Nobody's ever made an application. Anyway, so we went through this last year with an individual who said, I want to come rezone this and vacate the flat and put some homes on it. And the Planning Commission felt that that was not what was in the best interest. Mr. Rance Jones, I believe he's still here, he's in the audience tonight, has came and made a proposal. And he came last week, and I raised two concerns that I believe the proposal tonight alleviates, my concerns at least, was that the previous proposal was that they get rezoned to R111,000, and then each of these pieces be parceled off and given to each individual homeowner. My concerns with that was twofold. One, there's nothing to prevent the owner at that point from saying, you rezoned it, I'm coming back with four lots instead of one. There's nothing to prevent it from doing that. Second, Ms. Condi, was it Ms. Condi? I think it was. She alluded to my belief in unintended consequences that if you do that, it could, in the future, create a lot. It would be difficult, I understand that, but like I said, with enough money and engineering, you can do just about anything. For future flag developments by giving these lots the added square footage to further subdivide in the future. And while these homeowners may not want to, 20 years down the road, there could be different owners that do. So the proposal tonight is, I feel like it's a reasonable proposal. Mr. Jones has gone and gotten a legal description for land that consists of a triangular piece right here. And then it leaves a 15-foot easement along the back of these homes right along here for future access to the trail. My conversations with Mr. Jones were that if that's the case and the Planning Commission and City Council's rezone, only this legal descriptive, this portion that we've got a legal description for, we only rezone that to the 11,000 so that there's only one room for one lot. Then we open up negotiations between Mr. Jones and the city on purchasing that property at a public facility rate. And
the city purchases it.
That prevents my other concern around future subdivision. And I'll let Mr. Jones, I'm not going to speak for him at this point, but
it's like Chandler said, take a look at this property.
I'm sorry, before you get started, can you just say your name and address?
I live in Highland.
Okay.
And take a look at the property, and I think Chandler's completely correct. If I give the bulk of the property to the city, but the 15-foot trail is across that bottom corner, it makes it feasible to do it for us. So I have a gift, it's about 1.27 acres. To the city, it's open space now, and retain 0.42 tenths of an acre in that bottom corner for a building lot, if it's rezoned, makes it feasible for us to do.
So you build a single family home.
Solve all the problem of the problem we can get to the city.
Where is the trail zone?
It's on the, it's in
this one here.
This is for Mr. Jones, you can take a look at that. But it's on the very south end, it's this lot 10 right here. Imagine 15 feet back right through there, the access is back there. In your packet there is, it's the page after the subdivision, the legal description of the lot. There's kind of a hand-drawn image showing the trail easement. Now, I this is a difficult issue because I know that there are a number of residents that would like to see this as open space, but
would like to see, and I think we need some clarification there.
Has anyone specifically spoken out against developing that corner piece?
Yes.
Public comment was made earlier this evening, and
yeah.
Well, but they just talked about it. I think generally as the whole piece, without having the benefit of hearing his proposal.
Well, this is what was in the packet. And I don't know. I don't want to speak for any resident. I really won't.
Previous meetings, the public came out as opposed to being changed as well. Entirely.
Right.
But,
this is a new proposal.
Right. No one heard this proposal until 5 minutes ago.
Well, unless they read the packet.
Unless they read the packet. Yeah.
So I think that this is, given the history of this lot, and the city's tried to get it, and I've spoken with individuals, not Mr. Jones, but other individuals on this lot and the adjoining lot, about what they would sell that to, the city, and it's not at a public assembly rate. It's at a residential developable land rate. And quite frankly, that's not even a point when you begin negotiations. But I don't believe that it sets a precedent for subdivision on the other lot. I think it sets a precedent that we'll work with you on a reasonable proposal. This one I feel like is reasonable. But that's just my opinion.
I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
So, and I'll let the public's knowledge. So, in August of 2017, when this came before this body, we made the recommendation that it be changed to the R1 1000 residential zone. And I think people got in arms because they were residential and how to build these houses and such. I wanted to point out that we still kept the open space requirements intact. The reason why we recommended changing it to our 11,000 was that the nuisance ordinances as currently constituted don't apply to public facility zones. So if it's changed to our 11,000, then the owner would be required to, you know, weed abatement and things of that nature. So their use is a fire hazard and things of that nature.
That's been changed.
Yeah. But at the time, that's why we did what I did. But my question is the comment here about legislative action says application is pulled prior to final decision being made. So did this determination never, you said it was changed, but this as a...
Well, it never went to the city council. The original proposal for rezone and vacation to the open space was never taken to the city council. That application for rezone was changed. So rather than proceed with the rezone, we just addressed the nuisance code.
Right.
Okay. Which is a lot easier to enforce, I might add, than city property. Mm-hmm.
So I went out and walked this property again. I walked it previously as well, and I know there's 15-foot trail on the west there. There's a little bit of elevation there. I imagine if the trail was ever put in, some type of routine wall probably be put in. And so the homeowner should take that into account when they, you know, plan on placing a house or landscape or yard or whatever, that there's going to be probably a drop-off there. My first inclination, just like last time, was to maintain the open space. However, I also believe in property rights. And there has been comments around, you know, the individual obtained this land for a song and is, you know, going to make a lot of money. I don't see personally a problem making a lot of money. It's wise to decide who makes money or doesn't. But I also believe that property owner, I think that, in my opinion, this is a good trade-off. There's property owner gets to do part of what they would like to do, and the residents get to keep part of what they want to do. So that's the law.
Well, so I'm in favor of approving this.
I see the city picking up 3/4 of this property for a song.
I haven't asked. I need to be clear. I'm not specific. I've not asked that it be dedicated to the city for free. I've told him I would negotiate with him on a public facility rate. So that is, any decision, I need to be clear, is not contingent upon this being gifted to the city. That is not part of the agreement. So
right at 15-foot trail easement, instead of just carving that 15 feet off and having the city own that, why an easement instead of just have the city own that 15 feet?
If you don't want the easement,
And that, that seems more workable for the city.
We've done either one, honestly. If you ever go down on Harvey across from Deerfield, there's the trail. It's kind of between those fences. It's a narrow stretch, and it goes up into the Forest Creek area, and takes you from Harvey up through the trail system. That straight section of land there, that's trail easement. So we've done it in the past, and it's worked. It's easier if it's the city's property, but we've done it in the past.
Well, I think the city has the ability to develop it the way it wants to.
I see.
Without being subject to some restriction.
That's a good point.
I think all parties probably aren't completely content or happy with this arrangement, which is usually the sign of a compromise. Just have a look at it.
I think Scott flagged it. I know there's a number of concerns from the residents. It's up to the chair. They might hear those concerns.
They expressed them earlier, I believe.
Well, that just was.
Passing on the question.
What?
Is that correct?
Hi, Red. Sorry, just a tad late.
Go ahead and say your name and address and take 3 minutes, please.
Tyler Gardner, 10218 North Oak Court. I'm in lot 19. And the trail, it's a compromise. I'm here more looking out for lot 18 and 17, which is the Holbrechts and the Hawkins. Well, my concern, and this maybe can clarify it, if it ends up happening with the trail, I'm assuming, Grant, you'll put in a fence up above. You've mentioned you have dogs that you'll want to contain. But then I would assume that if a trail comes right behind 18, they're going to put in a fence as well, and so you're just going to have a narrow trail of lined by fences because nobody wants the trail right in their backyard. That's just a concern I have to take into consideration. Also, if the city takes on all of this land, you mentioned last meeting that we're having a hard enough time to re-abate the rest of the city. Is the city willing and prepared to take on the rest of this? You walk through it, it's a steep hill. It's hard to maintain, a lot of work, a lot of money that you're looking at. Yes, you'll get a seal of a deal, but long term, you're looking at a lot of money to maintain. So that's just, like I said, I'm not hugely affected by this more so than these other lots. I'm here kind of just representing them, but just to keep in mind those concerns. So, if it comes down the road that we need to compromise, everyone is willing to compromise, but just keep that.
There's a few good concerns. Let me go over them fast. It would create a narrow fenced off kind of lane right there, which you see down on the.
We
have one. Which I don't know that it's a terrible thing because you go through this little, because it's only for the length of this backyard right here, and then it opens up into an open space. So depending on what the plan there is, it could be actually kind of neat. But we've done it before, so I'm less concerned about that.
Second, you have the same right across the street, going to Stanley.
You do, right. That one's not fenced off, though.
It is now, on one side.
Oh, is it?
I've been on it for a few months now.
Okay.
Actually, both sides.
I'll have to go drive by. But it's just for a strip along one home, so it's not like a long corridor. But I totally understand the sentiment of I don't want to see people walking a trail in the backyard.
I'm a little confused then about the intent of open space. If it's not to be used by people.
No, it's to be used by people.
Then you're going to see people in your backyard.
Right, but if there's a fence, then you don't have to see them.
Well, that's a property owner's prerogative if they want to put the fence up.
On the one from Sunset to Forest Creek.
They have to be.
Require, when they put fences,
they
require open
privacy.
Fences.
They require open fences. However, I believe there'd be some grandfathering in here.
Yeah.
My first inclination when I went up to walk the property was really do we have this path and walk right here? Why not just not have one at all and people can walk around in lots 4 and 5 and get on the park? And then it was reminded, of course, how steep the access was up top and realized that there really was no way from up top to easily get on this parcel. So then I thought, okay, now we need
get access to the parcel from this end. So
yeah, they're really the only way to get access. If there were a trail, you can't come up here. Just ADA requirements would not allow you to. I mean, you have to zigzag up and down. It would be a nightmare. So really, your only access point is on this end.
And I think the fencing, I mean, because of the grade there, the fence in this point for 2 acres is going to probably have to retain wall on top of it. It's going to be up above. And people put a fence down in lot 18. It's still slowed down pretty far. I mean, you can put a really super tall fence to try to get privacy back in that backyard.
The trail would probably be more along the grade of 18 than Mr. Jones' property. Right. Excuse me. As far as weed abatement goes, we've always had this in the plan for acquisition. So at some point, the city has to acknowledge that that's part of the long-term maintenance in the project. So, consider it.
Is there any more comment from the audience on this? Or
go ahead and take 3 minutes. Stand up and state your name, address, and take 3 minutes.
John Condy, 4321 West Oak Road North. Address a question by Jerry Anderson, if I may. He said, well, there was opposition to the entire parcel being changed to residential from open space. But there was no opposition to just this particular lot. That was never brought up until it was mentioned tonight.
Well, I think you misstated what I said, sir. I said the public hadn't heard this proposal.
Right, okay. Well, is the public going to be offered an opportunity to hear this and then comment? 75 people were here from the neighborhood residential area expressing their concerns on this being changed from open space. Public facilities. Thank you. I can't guarantee, but I bet there's going to be that many if it were proposed again, just for this portion to be changed to residential. Is it going to be offered to the public before any decisions are made?
Thank you for your comments and questions. So I would say that the public's opportunity to weigh in on this topic was this evening. It was publicly noticed.
Yeah.
I don't want to debate. Your time is up. Thank you. All right. So, but I do have a question for Chandler.
Sure.
So, the fact that the, should this topic have been a public hearing again?
No, we've already done the public hearing. We're required to do one public hearing as part of a rezone process, and this item is tabled.
Okay.
Well, it means that, that there was no decision made at the previous meeting, and that they'll pick it up again at the next meeting, which they've done. But the Utah State Code requires public notices or public hearings and notices to be given out for certain items, rezoning being one of them. And that requirement was fulfilled for the Planning Commission during the May 22nd meeting. Now, whatever happens, up or down, this is going forward to the City Council. There will be another public hearing at that point before the City Council,
right,
per the State Code. But if they table it, the second meeting, there wouldn't be a public hearing there either. They would just be open to public comment.
So, thank you. So, is there any other discussion on this topic?
Yeah, I have a question. So, if I understand the proposal correctly, that would be to just change the zoning for the corner piece. Can we do that before it's actually subdivided?
Say that again. Can you
change the zoning of a piece of a lot that has
you can down in the county you can record it as two different parcel numbers. And so as the City Council has the land use authority, they can, when it's two different parcels, they can go say, okay, we're gonna rezone this parcel as a different zone. But you can't have we have in the past had zone or properties that have been one lot on two zones, and so that's why you'd have to, we've cleaned that up now, but that's why you'd have to
just parcel it out. So that this one has a parcel number of the county, and then the open space would have a separate parcel number.
Is your thought process that maybe this is more conceptual because we don't have true parcel lot numbers or official request to?
Well, I guess we have a legal description.
You have a legal description.
So I guess that becomes the record of what the zone change applies to.
Yeah. So that when I had the discussion with Mr. Jones, I knew a hand drawing wasn't sufficient. That's why we got a legal description.
So I read that legal description, and I continue to do change, because I agree that I'm like, I don't understand what, you know, CC can respond to that one kind of thing. So I appreciate that, and it's hard to like.
Well,
I assume that the legal description is, in fact, the parcel depicted.
Yeah, so I think the thing to, do you have the legal description in front of you?
Yeah.
If you look at it, the things that I think are the really pertinent issues are, rather than the legal description itself, what it contains, this first one, portion of lot to cut out Cedar Hill subdivision to purchase, that would be his lot to purchase from the current home, the current property owner. You can see that it contains 20,899 square feet, 4.48 acres, right? Then you see the trail easement, which is contains 22,519 square feet, 0.06 acres, and then you get to Cedar Hills Town, is 1.22 acres. So you can kind of see that, yeah. While the hand-drawn lines may not be
exact,
they represent.
Right. Gotcha.
Pretty accurately what the legal description is.
And what I understand is this was duly noticed, so we are in a position to approve this.
Yes, it went through, like I said, the Planning Commission was, and Congressional House was, so she can chime in as well. But as part of the May 22nd meeting, there was a public hearing. And I know Mr. Dredge did a number of them that night. And those were noticed in three locations. There were signs posted on property, there were signs posted throughout the city. Mailers went out, as well as emails went out to the city's listserv, which contains about 80% of the properties in Cedar Hills.
On a rezone for the entire property.
On a rezone for the entire property.
What we're considering tonight
is a rezone of a portion of the property, but it's still the same parcel number.
Yeah. The same contacts were made, and notice was made, yes.
We didn't redo the notice, no.
Because we continued from last time.
Because it was continued. There's no decision made. Now, if I'm off on this, I'm going to defer to the city's attorney. Am I catching you off guard here? Sorry. No. So a public hearing was given on this for a rezone of this piece of land. That was done on May 22nd. Signs were posted, notices were posted, mailers went out, it was emailed out to the city for our public hearing code. Tonight we're only considering a rezone, and it was tabled, there was no decision made. Tonight we're reconsidering a rezone of just this portion of that same piece. There was no public hearing done. I felt that it was already public noticed from the previous meeting, but it was the same piece of property in question. It wasn't a different piece of property, but nonetheless, we didn't do the public hearing because it was already done there. Do we need to redo that?
I mean, there is, all acknowledged, it's not, I mean, now you have final plans, but that's the purpose of the public hearing, is to get all the ideas and then develop the final plan and do it. So you put it out in general, so you get everybody's input, and then it's the duty of, you know, the staff, the planning, and the city council, to narrow it down and pass something. So you don't go to the public twice with the exact details. You go, you know, with something broad. Otherwise, you would really be kind of blanketing the public. You go out there broad, you actually consider the public input, then you formulate something. That's the intent. So
tonight we have a formulated idea based on input and reaction to the input that's described legally for us and part of the package tonight. It will again, and we'll be making the recommendation to City Council before whom there will be another public hearing that folks can address
at that time. That's that second round right in front of land use authority that I make.
And Mr. Jones had a question about this, but that public hearing won't be until the first meeting of August. So the city's required to put that public hearing out 14 days prior to the meeting, and our meeting is July 17th. As much as I wish I could read your mind, so I'll be able to put those pieces together.
So I will entertain a motion. I'll just rephrase my thought process again. Half of me wants to say this is always should always be this way because it's always been this way, and property owners bought houses with this certain expectation in mind, and then the other part of me says there's rights of property owners to do what they made with their property to a certain extent. I've been in these shoes. I mean, I have the middle substation is in my backyard. I didn't want that there. I bought that as much as I could, but it went in. I think that a compromise has been struck that allows the property owner to recoup whatever investment they made in the property and to exercise their property rights, and all the while respecting the property rights for most residents that live along there. So that's kind of where I lie. So, do you have a comment, or do you need to make a motion?
I'd like to make one comment. I think it bears reiterating Utah State Code 10-9A-102. Municipalities may enact all ordinances, resolutions, and rules, and may enter into other forms of land use controls and development agreements that they consider necessary or appropriate for the use and development of land within the municipality, including ordinances, resolutions, rules, restricted government easements, and development agreements governing uses, density, open spaces, structures, buildings, energy efficiency, light and air quality, transportation, and public or alternative transportation, infrastructure, street and building orientation, and wind requirements, public facilities, fundamental fairness in land use regulation, considerations of surrounding land uses, and the balance of the foregoing purposes with the landowner's private property interests, height and location, vegetation, trees, and landscaping, unless expressly prohibited. I think we're operating within those bounds as well.
Make a motion.
I'll get the motion in the packet that reflects where this item currently stands.
How so?
I don't think that is a scenario. I don't think vacating the open space provision is what we've been discussing. I think we've been discussing rezoning a portion of the parcel to residential.
Which one? Vacate the open space on that?
Yeah. On that same parcel. But not the rest of it. But it's only on the parcel that's got a legal description.
Your items won't have a reason on the vacation. There's no notice on the vacation of open space.
For the attorney again, Joel.
Specify, I think I know, but specify the question. I heard several things discussed.
It's seven.
So the subject is review recommendation amendments to the official zoning map, Cedar Hills, Oak Road, open space, other facilities. That's the subject. And the recommended motion indicates making the open space provision.
Which would happen when you rezone? I don't understand.
Was the public hearing supposed to say that it was vacating the open space as well?
If it does, then what I'm proceeding to do is
to notice it for the July 31st night.
Yeah, I I would suggest that we table this item until a proper legal, a little bit of time, but on the spot review, right, could be conducted.
I'm not worried. I'm just not worried on multiple levels. Now, you said you were rezoning, vacating the open space. I mean, it's consistent.
You have to vacate the prior zone to adopt a new zone for that property.
If we do, I mean, we can do it still as well. On July 31st.
Yeah, and we noticed, there'll be discussion at the city council meeting.
So I guess it's up to the planning commission. If you feel like that needs to be renoticed as a vacation of the public, of the open space, then we can. We will meet on July 31st, and we'll be a notice of public hearing. And then that will still proceed and notice. Check on that. So that would be the 5th. Tuesday of the month, rather than the 4th, because it's 21.
So we're saying it was noticed only for the reason.
So if you feel like that's a concern,
that doesn't automatically apply vacation of the open space in your zoning to R1.
That would delay the timelines, because I would still notice it for the August 7th meeting as well, with the understanding that you would make a decision one way or another that night on the 31st.
Yeah, I think we.
If you feel like that's something we should do to be more secure in the decision that you're making, that's fine.
I'll let the public secure their so I would suggest we table this notice it again.
Can we do it July 31st?
Does that make sense?
That's a regularly scheduled meeting.
Yeah.
It's good. We weren't going to have it, so that's fine. We can do that.
Be sure.
What's that?
But we'll have a
could not be a sure meeting. So, if that's a concern, I think that's a reasonable route. That would still put it before the city council on the August 7th meeting.
I don't think
the same meeting would have come forward with them anyway, but you feel that you've covered the bases you needed to.
Sure.
Just about.
So I entertain a motion to table this till July 31st.
I will
move next. I just next public next planning commission.
We table this until our next public planning commission meeting, with the understanding that the only publicly noticed to that we're considering rezoning and vacating.
Well, the public hearing would only be for the vacation of the open space.
Vacation.
On the specific parcel.
On a specific parcel, not for the reason we've already done the public hearing. Even though the topics discussed are going to be the same, for the city council, the language will be rezone and vacation of open space. That's fine.
Is the intent to give them better notice on the.
I don't think that the city can do a better job of noticing, quite honestly, because you put the signs on the property, you mail out 300 feet around the property, and you email everybody that has elected to get an email from the city on a weekly basis. So the method of noticing isn't going to change. It's just that this notice will specifically say the vacation of open space. So if that settles nerves, then
yeah. So this is a parcel, whatever you call it.
What vacation of public.
I'm going to use the same parcel number because it still is the same parcel.
Yes. Vacating the open space of lot 26 on that.
On a portion of lot 26. So,
I think this word will get out of what the current proposal is.
Okay, was that an actual motion?
That was a motion.
That was an actual motion. Do you need me to say it again?
No, go ahead.
Well, sir.
Any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So, put July 31st on your calendars and come back.
Mr. Jones, perhaps you could have your engineer draw relief restrictions?
If they can do it for the planning commission meeting, that's very simple, they do the representation. Sugar item six, skip.
Discussion on cargo shipping containers as accessory structures.
I think we found something we can all agree on. The city's had a number of requests from people interested in purchasing these Landsea containers and putting them in their backyards and making them into accessory structures, which, I'm going to be honest, I really don't like the idea.
Are they proposing sheathing them to make them look like sheds?
Not necessarily.
Just painting them.
Because
I think it's on the internet.
Changing the outside of them, because we currently have code, and I always have the nerves to try and find code, but there is code that requires that accessory structures be of the same make and material as the main primary structure. As the primary structure. So that's common. So if they were to park the Landsea, use it as the structure, and then do architecture around it to make it look like the home, that's different than just plopping the Landsea there.
It's dramatically different.
So,
yes.
So whereas one I would give consideration to approval, the other one.
Is there anybody in this body that is in favor of cargo shipping containers being used as accessory structures? Anybody? Speak now or for a little piece? Anybody? This is a discussion item, I think, in discussion.
I have a small discussion. It's just curiosity. This is a question. If someone were to purchase a lot and wanted to build a home out of containers, which people do, architecturally on the outside, turning them into an appropriate looking, appearing structure. Is that legal currently under city code? The correct architectural elements on the outside, pitch roof.
There are certain areas of the cities that I will say flat out no.
Okay.
And areas of the city that more ambiguous.
Okay. I know people that propose doing exactly that in Seems like Pleasant Grove, and they were encountering trouble. I can't imagine why.
You would probably have to meet building code.
They do have to meet.
You have to meet building code.
Structurally, it's actually real easy to make them meet building codes.
Honestly, I would extend this to be that shipping containers may not be used for main or accessory dwelling units without architectural elements on the side.
I would just say not at all.
Yeah.
Well, I think that the sample language from the Heber City Code has two valid exceptions. And that is that the container is being used as for personal property in conjunction with the two and from said property. We see that all the time.
Yeah.
And the container is being used for storage or construction with an actual
building. Neither of those is currently have an issue with.
Yeah.
It's the using it as a permanent accessory structure.
The shed.
So I don't know how much we need to hash this portion out, but.
So I need to dig up my underground bunker I built?
I think that might be a little ambiguous, though. Because he or she excludes them from residential zones with only those two exceptions. So then you don't get into an argument over what does it mean to keep it.
Well, let me give you an example.
Temporary versus permanent.
Because they allow for 2 weeks there. Let me give you an example. Last May, we had in Morgan a line break. I don't know if you remember this, that PI line ruptured in the middle of the night and just blew the road to smithereens from about the length of about 400 feet. Four homes there at the very bottom of the back up to the golf course there, they flooded. So the disaster mitigation company came in and they parks and containers on the driveways. If you recall, those driveways, those shipping containers were there, I want to say, 2 or 3 months. But not less than 2 months. I feel like it would be a little bit disingenuous of the city to have our infrastructure flood those homes and then say, that can only be another 2 weeks before we start cycling them. So that's why I would say that you've got to take those on a case-by-case basis. But I do see the need to specifically call out exemptions.
I don't know that I like the timeline that's there.
As long as they are
the 2 weeks after Heber.
That's what Heber has.
2 weeks seems a little relatively short to the person who's talking
first. For a move, it's probably fine, but for a building project,
for
it's
a building project, not. Yeah, a couple of months is not.
Well, 2 weeks is limited to the moving. Yeah. There is no 2 week qualification for the practical removal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Jenny and I will work together to. Put something together. There's one more item, which I think we can go through really fast.
Discussion on building requirements of SC1 zone.
Do you have a memo for this one?
Did you see a memo?
Oh, Bush League Chamber.
Bush League of me not to catch it, sorry.
That is, I'm sorry. This is kind of a conjunction what we talked about in May in limiting the square footage of the indoor climate control storage facilities. To be about what they were showing on the original concept, but I think it was about 3,600 square feet, 36,000
square feet.
But also, the code calls out on color schemes in under building requirements that it shall be dominated by earth tones. In light of Walmart's decision to put their blue stucco over there, a number of people have expressed concern about that code, so it was an intent to call that out a little bit more rather than say dominate, give it an actual percentage of the building. Mm-hmm. What are any thoughts?
Percentage of the building for what again?
The earth tones.
Earth tones. So the Walmart facade, you look at it, and it's probably still north of 90% of it is
earth tones.
Well, earth tones or brick.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I don't like it. To me, building as sign.
There was one, if you don't like ours, you should drive up to the one up in Salt Lake where they actually painted the brick blue.
Oh.
So if you don't like ours, go home.
I know they've got to stay in business, they've got to be able to advertise and part of it. That blue, that Walmart blue tells people it's in the Walmart.
Right.
I get that. I just don't like what they ended up doing.
Well, the nice
kind of
thing,
here or there.
The nice thing about it is that it's stucco, so it's not like it has to say that permanently.
Right. Right. So,
if there's any silver lining there.
So we're talking about building requirements or signage requirements?
It's in two places. It is under the signage requirements, but it also is under the building requirements. It's in two places. So we want to specifically call out what those percentages would be. Rather than saying predominantly that it is
96%
or whatever. I don't know. I don't even know the magic number there, to be quite honest.
I don't know how you pick a number.
Any number seems a bit arbitrary.
Yeah.
I mean, we have signage requirements that we have to make.
Didn't the Walmart proposal come under the signage requirement?
Say that again?
Yes.
I think that may be right. I'm not questioning
it. This body recommended that it happen.
Well,
yeah.
I understand, but I'm just saying, I think you have to consider the signage as a part of the building, because you could say 100% building, but then if you approve the sign, then you have the same result.
Well, the other concern I have with regulating the sign to that extent is that certain companies have certain colors, logos,
right.
schemes that
right.
are there.
Right.
Right.
The blue mark is what I mean.
And I think that if you step on it too much, you're really limiting access to the commercial zone. So on the signage, I'm less likely to say, I mean, I personally feel less inclined to really regulate that. It's more the building itself. Not the sign. Because on a building, when you get a building plan in for approval, you'll see designated sign areas, which,
yeah.
And everything else will be called out as earth tones, more than likely. But the signage, I feel like there should be a lot of leeway in allowing them to use their terms of color schemes. But then you regulate the actual sign area.
Size, yeah.
Just my thoughts.
You can call it the building, it's not going to be all earth on them, and put anything that isn't on their side of it.
It's only the project, so.
I don't understand why we're even talking about this. It seems like we already have this in place. Am I seeing something here?
It says predominantly, though, and there's it's kind of vague.
The building or the signage?
Building.
Both. Or building, both.
Which is what we
predominantly. Predominantly. So what if they came with a building and said that's 51% earth tones, the other 49% is
pink
neon colors?
Which smacks of our old guidelines.
It's predominant. It's not. What you want to do with code is define it so that the developer, the city, everyone knows what the expectations are. There's not any big reason to hash out.
Have you looked at other city codes?
Our city is very unique in terms of the development guidelines under the commercial zone.
Other cities would be far less.
Far less. Park City's not.
I don't know. I don't know how you pick an arbitrary number, and then
it's easier. I think it's easier actually to pick an arbitrary number than to go to battle over the word predominant.
You could say 100% and then let people push back.
All the way outside.
Handle a variance or whatever. You just say 100%.
Don't have to say 100%. Just eliminate predominant. The latest beer?
Could do that.
You're getting the giggles.
And then just deal with the sign area? What you're saying?
It's an answer.
I'm kind of leaning that way, so maybe the code we bring forward will be more in line with that, and we'll hash it out from there. I don't believe that there's a time sensitive thing we have to address here, but it's something I wanted to put on in the agenda. So.
Well, I think that the body, with full awareness, we know they need signage. That's, of course. I think we can control one section of code instead of two.
So, I'm tired.
Have a meeting to adjourn. A motion to adjourn. So moved.
Seconded.
So moved and seconded. So I think I made a motion to adjourn. And Dodge here, so second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.